It's the 120 podcast, Mikey Finale alongside Ben Hootie. If you're just joining us for the very first time, stay tuned. In about 20 minutes, we'll get to Alex Cohen, the voice of the Iowa Cubs. We're excited for that interview. But first, Ben and I want to do a little bit of our classic podcast, and it couldn't come at a more opportune time in the negative sense. Two games below 500. We didn't think the Cubs would look at this season, especially this early on. Thank God for the hot start they had, because the Cubs have really ended May with an incredible skid, Ben Hootie.
Yeah, last time we recorded, it was right before that Cardinals series, which that Cardinals series was just kind of odd. I said, just take series against St. Louis, Milwaukee, and Cincinnati. Just do your job. And they didn't do that at all. They won two games this week, one against Milwaukee and, you know, one against Cincinnati. And both of them were hard-fought wins. They weren't easy by any means. So, yeah, it's getting embarrassing. And I mean, I'm assuming that you're going to have some things you want to talk about, and I'll kind of chime in with it. But it's just this is a really tough stretch. They're in a bad rut right now. I didn't really expect it, but here we are, and we kind of got to face the music and just, you know, move forward and just kind of see where you go next and hope that it's eventually positive. And I know you have some reasons to be positive, but there's also a lot to be negative about
absolutely.
I don't want to pass over as well.
Absolutely. And I mean, people will overreact as much as they want, but I think it's in reason. You see Matt Nagy tweet comparisons today to Craig Counsell saying we'll catch our stride and just be you and stuff like that. People are just retweeting pictures of Counsell and it's fading into Matt Nagy. I wouldn't go that far to make that comparison so far, but yeah, it's a tough stretch. It's something we've seen last season, and something we've seen throughout Cubs history. But you'll hit a rut, and hopefully it's just not enough to tank the whole season, as you had a terrible month of May. The last series they won was that Friday, May 10th start of a series against the Pirates, the road series at PNC Park. They won that series. Then they lost to the Braves in a series. They lost to the Pirates in that four-game set at Wrigley. They lost to the Braves again. That Cardinals series where they only ended up playing those two games, they lost both of those. Then they had the Brewers series in Milwaukee, and then this Red series. It's just been tough. We had the win on Saturday night in a crazy fashion, 7-5, in a game that started at 9:30. Thank God for that game, because that game got a little bit of morale back. It was fun, but then lost a real stinker on Sunday. And then they have the off day today before they head to a big home stretch where you're going to need to get some wins, starting with your crosstown rival. But Ben, we'll kind of deep dive into more of those exact games. I talked about this Red series, how tough this was. We've seen some strong performances from the pitching mound yet again, and it's just a matter of not being able to score with runners on base.
Yeah, that's what I said to you. Like, you texted me the other day and you were like, it kind of sucks because it feels like they're hitting again. And I kind of was like, not really. Like, yes, they're putting up runs to make the score feel more even with the other team, but it's just the situational, like, they can't hit situationally at all. And it's so frustrating, because I go back to I think it was on Friday afternoon, which was just a hard fought game, ended up losing on a horrible send by Nick Madrigal, but it shouldn't have even been in that position, because there was a point in the game where they had the bases loaded with nobody out and they only scored on an RBI walk. And that's just one of many scoring opportunities that they had throughout that entire game. Shit, the entire weekend. And not even the entire weekend. This is going back all the way to really St. Louis, I feel like. And you saw it in Milwaukee as well. They just don't know how to hit situationally. And while, yes, like, they're fine after like a week of not hitting a home run, they're starting to hit homers and, you know, they're playing these teams close, but they're losing all these games by like one or two runs. And go yell at the bullpen all you want for blowing a game, whatever it might be. But in all reality, it's these missed opportunities that they're not cashing in on, you know, runners at third with one out. You should score that every single time. If you're a Major League Baseball team, bases loaded, a leadoff double that you can't cash in. So many times we've seen this throughout the week, and it's just frustrating, especially when they're losing these games by one or two runs.
Bellinger had three hits yesterday, including a couple different times where he was on base, like you said there, Ben, and then just got stranded. The pesky team that traded their Cy Young and lost quite possibly someone who's been named one of the top managers in baseball, although it's funny because he's now the manager of the Chicago Cubs. The Brewers, I'm getting at, 36-23 now, seven games above the Cardinals, for the top spot in the NL Central. The Cubs 7.5 games back. They've played a few less games. And the Brewers, of course, 36-23, really pulling away on this season, or early on in the season, I should say. We saw this last year. The Brewers always find a way to stay at the top of this division, now running on 6, 7 years. This is tough. I mean, this is not fun to watch when you're going to a series in Milwaukee and you're losing games.
I gotta give them their flowers. They are, as much as we thought it was council, 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 and it, you know, that might have been a big piece of the recipe to their success. They are just such like the organization itself is just the way that they are able to develop players and the way that they play baseball. I mean, just looking back on this last week, Mikey, when you were watching those games, it was kind of just they were doing everything better than the Cubs in terms of hitting with runners in scoring position, you know, bringing in the right reliever at the right time to get the right person out. And the thing that I noticed the most, the way that they run the bases is just it's impressive. And that's why they're off to the start. I mean, it's just I can't believe that they are off to the start, especially considering the fact that I thought going into this year, St. Louis and Cincinnati and the Cubs were all better than this Milwaukee team. I take that back 100 times out of 100 because just the way that they're able to develop players, they have a bunch of, it feels like no-namers out here, but they're just raking off every single team in Major League Baseball. And just got to give credit to them for the start they're at. It's going to be a tough hill to climb for not just us, but St. Louis and Cincinnati if we even want to, you know, close this margin. They're going to have to start taking games on Milwaukee, but Milwaukee is taking games on all those teams every single time.
You don't get to play him as nearly as often as you used to. Didn't see
Yeah.
him until the beginning of May. And we look at Christian Yelich, especially, as kind of the deal breaker for me. In his 2018 and 2019 MVP and MVP runner-up season, respectively, he hit .326 and .329. He's hitting .323 on the young season. That's the first time in that 300 level since that 2019 season. Got down to .205 in the COVID season. And yeah, he really has built a comeback earlier on in this year. Really has brought up his numbers. 27 RBIs already, only 29 strikeouts.
And that's with missing time as well.
And he's still on 8 bases. He's really hitting for this Brewers team. And it's so interesting because they didn't define a tank, but they traded the Cy Young. And they're already getting young production out of that, but they traded the Cy Young, and that's the bottom line. Like, this is a Brewers team that really is all about reload, not rebuild. And somehow, a team that most would argue is one of the more forgettable in the entire MLB always finds a way to be on top.
They do it every time. You said it perfectly. Reload, not rebuild. And you know, it just kind of was a thing of like, hey, we're not gonna have the money to be able to re-sign Corbin Burns. He's gonna get probably become the highest paid pitcher in Major League Baseball history after this offseason. Why don't we get ahead of the curve and get as much young talent as possible? I'm trying to remember the throughout trade in my head, but I know one option of that trade was Joey Ortiz, and he absolutely just, you know, lit up the Cubs this week,
That's
and
what I was
he kind
alluding
of
at
has
there.
all year. And I know that they've, I think there was a young pitcher that came from the trade as well that made a start against us. It's impressive. It's impressive what they're able to do with that. And it's crazy to think, yeah, they traded the Cy Young, but hey, we're still one of the best teams in the National League, and we're gonna still bring back one of the best pitching staffs in the National League as well.
It's Tampa Bay Rays-esque. You find a way to be competitive in a division with bigger money teams year in and year out and be better than them. Let's think about the Cubs here for a second. This has been an interesting week, obviously, 2 weeks. It has been the worst stretch of the season thus far, bar none, being a young season. One person we talked about last time recorded that was like, holy cow, start looking for rent in Des Moines. He's heated back up. Ian Happ.
Yeah. Good. He's really been the one player that you kind of, I mean, as of recently, I guess there's been some other good performances, but it's good to see that Happ is starting to, you know, pull it back together. And he's starting to hit from the right side of the plate too, which is nice. So, he probably heard us, or he probably heard all Cubs fans and was like, all right, I got to turn this ship around. Some other players do as well. So, I mean, you could call out whoever you want, Mike, but I think just everyone's got to get it together. And Happ's the big one. It's been nice to see that he is actually looking like a serviceable Major League Baseball player.
Have been good. Cody's been on a nice streak, except for one game in that Red Series he went over, but he's been on a nice streak generally. Say's been hitting the shit out of the ball as always. If not for Dansby's game-winning home run late on Saturday night, maybe early Sunday morning, it would have been the Saya game, the opposite of the Samberg game, where he blew the game and then tied it up with an error and then a grand salami, his first of his career. Just got all the way a hold of that one, went all the way past the left field bleachers, destroyed that baseball. That was awesome to see. So Saya's been hitting the shit out of the ball. Cody Happ. But yeah, there's some gaping holes. Except for the game-winning home run, Dansby has been rough. I don't know what the hell they're going to do about the backstop position. He got one RBI yesterday. You called up David Bodie to try and play some infield. There is some gaping holes.
And we're getting to this weird feel, really weird territory with Michael Busch as well. They've been like, well, first of all, we kind of all knew this was coming when PCA ended up being called back up, which is obviously something we haven't talked
Yeah,
about yet.
that's
But
huge too.
when PCA got called back up, Jed said if he's ever back, he's going to see playing time basically every day. And since PCA's been here, I'm pretty sure he started in every game.
Yeah.
So, that's you're starting to look at someone who is your starting center fielder, which means Belly's going to be playing more. I don't know if he's going to play the corners necessarily, but he's going to be playing or the corner outfield, but he's back at first.
Yeah, that's the thing, because Bush's spot is no longer secure, so it almost
Right.
completely shoes in making Bellinger play first again, which he's been good in center. But yeah, you're not good, just gonna let PCA is too good for AAA at this point. Like, he went back downstairs. You're gonna hear about it in this Cohen interview that we're gonna have later in the episode. PCA went back downstairs and absolutely raked,
Yeah.
continued to rake for the 2 days after we interviewed Alex before he got called back up, and now he's back upstairs and, as Jed said, will see significant time. So Cody's got to move back to first. Where does that leave the Bushman?
Kind of filling in as a spot when Belly's in center, Bush will be at first. When Belly's at first, Bush is probably gonna have to share some time with the Talkmans and the Wisdoms of the world at DH.
Right.
So that's kind of it. They're not, I know they're not gonna try him at third base because they shot that down as soon as he got traded to the team.
Yeah, too many people in line ahead of him.
Right.
I mean,
So
you have Morel, who they're still trying to make it happen because he can still hit relatively decent. They're trying to make Morel at third still happen, even though it hasn't been great. They option Madrigal back downstairs, so that's see you later, Nick, for at least the time being. Then you're unless something happens where they need him right away. Wisdom could play third. They don't have him play third, and then they called up David Bodie, who could play third as well, even though he's technically listed as a 2B. So. There is a lot going on there. Who at this point, and I talked about this yesterday with some people, who has that short leash? Like, who is it Madrigal? Is it Wisdom? Is it David Bodie? Who is like the first person that it's kind of like, see ya if it just isn't working out?
probably Bodie.
Yeah. I mean, yes, but you call Bodie up and how long are you going to keep him up? What is
Actually,
the
no.
plan
You
here with David Bodie?
now that I think about it, maybe not Bodie because it kind of, I was thinking about this. It goes back to the Alex interview, and you obviously hear about it. But we bring up Bodie, and this obviously happened before he got called back up.
It was good timing.
And he said, and I've always known this. For everyone that was complaining, like, why is David Bodie downstairs? There are some financial stuff that goes along with it. Now that Bodie's on the major league club, that $5 million a year or whatever gets pushed onto the their salary for this year, which is now pushing the Cubs over the salary cap, I'm pretty sure, which means they're gonna, they've tried to stay under that luxury tax every year, but I think now with Bodie up, they're pushing that luxury tax, so maybe they won't send him down. I don't think we're going to see Madrigal again for a long time.
That's
If
what I was thinking.
we're just going to go back to that main point, it's been rough for him. He's just, I don't think, I think the experiment's over. He plays a really nice third base, but the slappy hits come in clutch sometimes, as me and you always love to say, slappy Nick,
Slappy.
just stick your bat out there and get into something. But
Hope you
it's,
connect.
man, you can it, he just doesn't work in today's Major League Baseball, like really at all. And
No.
for you, the only other person I could think of that it like works for across Major League Baseball is Stephen Kwom. but he at least has an OPS like over 800.
Yeah, he just came back from injury. I have my fantasy team and he's hitting like 350 something.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
And
been great.
Madrigal is not that. He's, you know, a 250 hitter that doesn't take walks. Like he puts the ball in play every time. It's just never going to work.
Okay, so for these cups, before we get into the Cohen interview, and you're right about Madrigal. I just want to move on with the schedule real quick. You said I had a silver lining before we get to the Cohen interview. Fine, I do. This has been tough, but there was some things I saw this morning on Twitter that, or X, that the Cubs need to take advantage of a month of June that is significantly better for their schedule. They start off with the White Sox, then the Reds, the Rays, the Cardinals, the Giants, the Mets, the Giants again. And then the Brewers again. So if you can start rolling into your next series with the Brewers, which will be at home, that could be huge. The Brewers, as it stands, are the only team I listed there that is currently above 500. Albeit a lot of teams I listed there, including the Reds and Rays, are teams that are right there with the Cubs, like right on the fringe. So there is some tough similar teams in that stretch, but you really, really, really need to take off starting here with two games against the White Sox at home. Zero reason you don't need to win both of these games. It's a two-game series. For the love of all things George Halas and the gods of Chicago sports, you need to win these two games against the White Sox. They are quite possibly the worst team in baseball history. I'm sorry I'm ranting, but every other team in baseball has over 20 wins, and the White Sox have 15.
Dude, I didn't know they were this bad. I'm gonna be completely honest with you. I was at my sibling's graduation party and one of my relatives was like we were talking baseball or whatever, and he was like, "Man, the fucking White Sox on a 10-game losing streak." I'm like, "What? No, they're not.
Yeah.
It's 11 now. It's
Yeah.
11. That's absurd in itself." Yeah, they might be the worst team in Major League history. You have to take two games. If you assert your dominance.
Yes. Please, please. It's not even, I don't even care about the like Chicago crosstown aspect of it. Be a team that's going to supposedly fight for a wild card spot this season. You need to beat a team that's rivaling the Detroit Tigers. The Detroit Tigers, by the way, in 2003, I looked it up. Worst team in the 162 game era, 43 wins. So the White Sox are gonna be right there. They're only at 15 now. They are they're 30 wins away basically, and they are on an 11 game losing streak as we head into June. That's gonna be close.
That's so bad. I can't believe
If
that.
you're telling me 102 games or so left, I thought I saw in a tweet, and they need 30 wins to not be the worst team ever. So okay.
They're
We're not
not.
a White Sox. They're not going to
They're
do it.
gonna.
We're not a White Sox podcast, though. We have to win these two games. I mean, this is more about the Cubs need to find a way.
Yeah. They have to. They have to assert their dominance. Sure. Turn the corner. Show us what you showed us on Saturday night with just that awesome game. You know, Saya hitting the Grand Slam, Dansby finally coming in clutch and feels like he's doing something for the first time in like a year and a half. Like, bring me back to those vibes that I felt on Saturday
That
night
was
because
awesome.
that was like, all right, maybe this team's back. And then 12 hours later, they're like,
Yeah.
nope, fuck you, we suck.
By the way, Shota Imanaga, we haven't talked about this yet on this episode before we get into the Cohen interview. Rough start against the Brewers in his first ever start against the Brewers. Still has that sub-2 ERA. Forget about it. It'll
He'll be
happen.
fine.
He
He'll be
has to
fine.
start tomorrow. I'll be in attendance, actually, against the White Sox, Ben.
One thing I do want to complain about that really quick. What? You know, we got 11 days of rest.
Yeah, they didn't. They Why did they not push him and start him Saturday in St. Louis? Like, why did they not just push it all back?
Stupid. Stupid.
Yeah,
But he'll be
it's
fine. He'll
ridiculous.
be fine. He'll be fine.
Yeah, I thought that was ridiculous at the time, and he had 2 weeks of rest, like you said, and then came out sluggishly against the Brewers, which is fine. He'll be fine. He has to face the White Sox tomorrow, tear him back up again, keep that ERA under two, and then Wednesday against the White Sox, 2.84 Jameson Taillon, who's also been really awesome this year as well. So, go win both these games, please, please, for our sanity, win both of these games.
No, literally, because
Yes.
we're gonna hear the end of it too if we lose. So
We
just
definitely
please
will.
just take care of business. We'll move on to the next series. That's all that matters.
All right, we will be back with an outro after this interview, but thank you for listening to our little beginning. We have a big interview for today. We've been talking to Alex about doing this for a little while. We got him on the podcast. He is the voice of the Iowa Cubs. He knows the ins and outs of this team and their players. Perfect timing. We talk about Pete Crow Armstrong. We talk about David Bodie. Ben Brown, all players that have been topical for the Cubs recently. And when we did this interview last week, PCA and Bodie were both still members of the Iowa Cubs. So it's pretty uncut. It's what we thought last week, and it's going to be kind of fun to listen to some of that foreshadowing. So, Ben, any thoughts on Alex Cohen before we let it roll?
No, thank you to Alex. We'll probably say this in the outro as well, but awesome interview, and I can't wait for you guys to listen to this.
Here's Alex Cohen of the Iowa Cubs. And welcome back to the 120 podcast, Mikey and Ben. Now, alongside Alex Cohen, the voice of the Iowa Cubs for the last six season. Alex, thank you for joining us here on 120 today.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Really appreciate it.
We are fans of you, and I think this kind of started on Twitter a couple, maybe a month ago, a couple weeks ago,
Yeah.
when you were on Marquee, and my dad was just finding ways to get you to shout out whoever he could on Marquee. He thought it was the funniest thing, and he's a fan of you now because of it, and said that he complimented your
Love that.
broadcasting. So, no, but that was awesome, and I think we started talking about this then, so it's been great to organize this and now have you officially on the show.
Yeah, it's fun being able to interact with fans, especially with the platform that Marquee has. And yeah, I love giving shout outs. It's a lot of fun. They can personalize it. They can even be fake shout outs. I'm cool with it. It's fun.
So let's start from the beginning. Where did you, because we're both aspiring sports broadcasters in this
Yeah.
industry, where did you kind of get your start? What made you passionate about, really wanting to get into this and dive into it?
Yeah, it really started when I was younger. Grew up in the Philadelphia metropolitan area. Grew up Philly, Sixers, Flyers, Eagles fan. Baseball was my passion. So listening to, Merrill Reese for the Eagles and Harry Callis for the Phillies. I mean, those were my guys growing up. And then once I realized that throwing an 83-mile-per-hour flat fastball would not get me to the big leagues, it was, broadcast full steam ahead. Did it in high school. My friends and I started the Sports Broadcasting Club. And actually, it was three of us, and all three are still in the industry. Josh Getzoff is a radio play-by-play voice, or actually now the television play-by-play voice of the Pittsburgh Penguins. And then another one of my best friends, Steven Watson, does the pre- and post-game show of Bally Sports for, yes, the Milwaukee Brewers. So it's an interesting series between us right now, between for the Cubs and the Brewers. So always some bragging rights on the line there. But yeah, we started the Sports Broadcasting Club at our high school, broadcasted everything. I mean, I'm pretty sure that my second broadcast ever was Powder Puff Football. So that's what really got me started. And field hockey, lacrosse, softball, basketball, volleyball, swimming, golf. I mean, the only sport that I didn't do was baseball because I played baseball in high school. Then went to college at Indiana University and was a journalism student and did student radio at WIUX for 4 years. And that's when my playing days ended, my broadcast days started, and did everything between producing, radio show hosting, play-by-play for wrestling, baseball, softball, football, basketball, and then from that point, 12 years of minor league baseball. So it's been a nice non-linear path, but one that I've called 1,500 career games, and I'm looking for what, 15,000 more.
That's awesome. And not to get on us too much here, but Ben and I come from a similar path at WZND in Illinois State. I recently graduated. Ben's going to be a senior there next year. So we understand that student radio side of it. Do you have any funny like student radio stories from your time doing stuff at Bloomington or even
Yeah.
earlier in your career?
No, I do. My freshman year, I was a producer for a morning show on Thursday. It's called the Thursday Morning Hangover. And I got my first break to be a host because my co-host, or one of the co-hosts, was literally too hungover to come in. And it was, I think, an 8 a.m. show, 7:50, not there. 7:55, not there. 8 a.m., not there. So I just hop on and I talk sports for an hour. So I host my first solo radio show because the host at the time was a little under the weather, and very appropriate to the show name. So that's one that really sticks out for me.
Did you have any favorite sport when you were doing like in high school or even at Indiana, like other than baseball?
It was football. Yeah, just
Football.
growing up an Eagles fan. And I stopped playing high school football my junior year. So yeah, calling football is a blast. I mean, it's just so fast paced, and once you understand the game, you understand the schemes. If you have a good color broadcaster, it's a fun broadcast.
So you brought up there if you have a good color man and that's or woman, and that's a point that we've seen in college broadcasting as well. And one of the things that I saw is coming from that even high school sports background, you understand the sport a lot. You talked about that transition from high school sports right into more of a broadcasting side. Becoming a
Yeah.
play-by-play voice becomes a little bit trickier. How did you kind of get into that and get to the point you're at now?
I mean, I just knew that I wanted to do it, just listening to, you know, the Phillies voices and the Eagles voices, that type of pace, that type of artistry, that type of cadence was something that I wanted to do when it comes to storytelling and painting a picture and, you know, talking about sports in that realm for my career. But, you know, getting a play-by-play identity, especially with baseball, when it's 9 innings and 3 hours and some of the games you're doing by yourself, especially at lower levels, you don't have a color analyst. Right. It's really difficult to build that identity. I mean, it probably took me 1,000 games to really feel comfortable in my own skin and broadcast a baseball game. I mean, and there's still days that I don't. And there's still days that I struggle. And there's still days that I go back and listen to the tape and it's cringeworthy. But you start to get that rapport with yourself. And when you have a color analyst, being able to do that 2 or 3 years, and, you know, once it clicks, you know, once it sounds right, man, it's glorious. It feels so good.
That's funny you bring that up, because me and Mikey will literally talk about that all the time, like cringeworthy calls that we have that like we regret yeah. doing. We were literally Mikey, we were talking about the one the other day when you said you had like your embarrassing softball call. You said that baseball is long gone.
Yeah, I said goodbye baseball. It was after a week of doing baseball, and I had an ISU game, and I had shouted goodbye baseball or announced it after a softball home run, and the broadcast went dead for about 15 seconds before I had to find a way to save that. And I'm sure, Alex, you understand that one. But it's cool to hear you've been in this entire background. You seem like you've had a great background in major and minor league baseball as well. I saw early on in your career you had some time with the A's and a couple different franchises in minor league baseball. Yeah. So if you want to get into that a little bit, where that took you into the Iowa Cubs.
Yeah, sure. So when I was in college at Indiana University, my first 2 years of minor league baseball, 2009, 2010, intern for the Lehigh Valley Iron Picks, AAA affiliate for the Philadelphia Phillies. It's like a half hour from where I grew up. Then after graduating IU, went the indie ball route, broadcaster for the Gateway Grizzlies of the Frontier League as their number two broadcaster. Then the winter of 2011, I guess the start of the winter of 2012, basically emailed every single minor league baseball team, 250 emails, 25 responded, 5 interviews, 1 job offer. So the Huntsville Stars, AA affiliate for the Brewers, called their games for 2 years, and they got sold, and just didn't have an opportunity to go back there the last year because they weren't having a radio broadcast. So I went out to Oakland as a broadcast media relations intern, did not broadcast the game, just basically sat in the booth and listened to Ken Korak and Vince Catronio really teach me the ins and the outs of play-by-play. Basically, all the good stuff that I had in Huntsville, was able to cultivate that, and all the bad stuff that I had in Huntsville, I listened to them, just be like, man, you can't do that. So being able to listen to them and learn was really, really helpful. Then started from the ground up, went to the Australian Baseball League, called games for the Melbourne Aces. That was a winter here and a summer out there, and then came back to the States and really started from the ground up. Voice of the Idaho Falls Chuckers, the rookie league affiliate of the Kansas City Royals. That was 1 year in 2015. Then the voice of the Single A Bowling Green Hot Rods, Single A affiliate for the Tampa Bay Rays for 2 years in the Midwest League, and then 6 years in Iowa. So once again, it went from Double A to out of play-by-play to rookie ball to Single A to Triple A. So it's a non-linear path, but one that, you know, I've been able to hit my time zones and hit my states and hit my area codes. And it's been a lot of travel, a lot of bus rides, and a lot of fun.
You already mentioned some of the people that you've like looked up to in terms of, you know, getting notes and being able to expand your career in play by play, but who are some people like just across the baseball industry that you kind of studied and probably still do as well, that you just think you try and kind of model the way that you call games off of?
Yeah, of course. No, the Cubs organization is, they're so rich with broadcast talent. And I might be biased. I don't really care if I am. I think that Pat Hughes is the best radio broadcaster in baseball. And I think Boog is the best television voice in baseball, a television face, personality. I think that Cubs fans, don't take it for granted. They're special. They're professional. They make it fun. They make it interesting. They don't take themselves too seriously. It's a great broadcast on the radio side with Coom and with Pat, and then on the television side with obviously Boog and JD. That's, they're so good. And just being able to listen to them when we're off, or, you know, when the Occupants are playing at night and they're playing during the day, you learn so much. So,
and you've gotten to fill in for them as well. I saw it as recently as spring training in here and there. So what are some things you've heard from them? And when you do those Cubs games, even in the spring training level, what are those things that you take away from those fill-ins?
Don't take yourself too seriously. Just have fun. It doesn't matter if it's in front of 3,000 people or 30,000 people. Go into every half inning with a smile, because if you're smiling, the listener's smiling. If you're frowning and not having a good time, the listener won't have a good time. So it's our disposition as a radio broadcaster and our energy that will help dictate the broadcast. The game dictates the action. Our energy dictates the broadcast.
What is the best advice that anyone in this industry has given you that you've kind of taken with you across your career, and just, it's just kind of, you know, how the stranglehold on you, I guess you could say.
I'll go with what I said last. Smile. Just smile when you go into every half an inning. You know, get that countdown 5, 4, 3, even put on a smile on your face right now. Even if you're not happy, because that'll bring your broadcast. Like if you're feeling like a 3, then that smile will bring your broadcast to a 5. If you're feeling like a 5, it'll bring that broadcast to an 8. So just force yourself to smile, breathe, have fun. Not every game is game 7 of the World Series. You will blow big calls. You'll nail big calls. I mean, it's one of those things where if you go 1 for 3 in a broadcast, let's say you have 1 good inning, 2 bad innings, you're going to the All-Star game.
All right, let's get a little bit on the iCubs here before we keep going with this. There's so much to talk about with this team. I mean, this is why we want to do this right now. Obviously, this won't release till later this week, but the current, you know, the upstairs Cubs, they haven't had as much of a hot stretch as they started the real season with. But the Iowa Cubs, from all reports I keep seeing, a lot of young talent playing really well. Just in a general elevator pitch, what's the state of the iCubs right now, and what should we be looking at?
Well, when you have the two top prospects in the organization with Cade Horton and Pete Crow Armstrong, it is very star heavy. Yeah, Pete Crow Armstrong reigning International League Player of the Week. The shot heard around social media when you get thrown behind twice and then you pimp a 400-foot home run. And I said it on the broadcast, I wish he took 5 minutes rounding the bases. I don't think he milked it enough. Yeah, I wish that bat flip went over the wall. I mean, he deserved so much more than what he gave and what he was basically given with Willie Peralta throwing behind him. So, you know, having those guys, I mean, this team can flat out hit. It's Pete Crow Armstrong, it's Owen Casey, it's Matt Mervis at the AAA level, it's BJ Murray Jr. You know, those are the guys that have really stuck out. And then on the pitching side, you know, Jordan Wicks was a major league rehabber for us. His last two starts, Daniel Palencia, major league rehabbing for us. You know, threw 101.2 miles per hour earlier this series. And then Cade Horton, the number 2 ranked prospect in the organization, making his 5th AAA start. So big names at the big league level coming down here, trying to get healthy. And then you have 3 of the top 5 prospects in the organization. It's a lot of fun to be around.
Cade Horton, everyone is so excited for him. Obviously, only five starts, but what have you seen out of him that just, you know, is going to get Cubs fans so excited to see him in the major leagues maybe this year?
He's so athletic. Remember, he was a guy who was a 2-way player, or was a football and a baseball player at Oklahoma. He said his recruiting pitch was Lincoln Riley coming into his living room and saying, hey, you can play both sports. Imagine that. Imagine one of the best offensive minds in all of football coming into your room. It's like, you know, yeah, you could be in our quarterback room. You could play baseball. He's backing up Spencer Rattlers now in the NFL, and then becomes one of them, top 10 overall pick in baseball in 2022. That's nice to have. And you're really, really athletic, really, really good kid. You know, fastball's 94 to 96. The slider is legit. And he's getting a split change that he's working on each and every game that's becoming an out pitch. If he can solidify that as his third pitch, look out. I mean, it's pretty nasty.
You talk about the amount of major leaguers that you've seen in the rehab starts, even in recent years. Who can you compare Cade Horton to, as you've seen right now, to someone Cubs fans would be more familiar with at the higher level?
Yeah, I talked about this on during his last start on the broadcast. It's a little bit Tim Hudson for me. You look at Tim Hudson when he was with the Braves, or he was with the Athletics, you know, 5-time All-Star, really sticks out, like body type and fluidity to me. And then there's some Sonny Gray in there too. Sonny Gray, first round draft pick for the Athletics. We'll talk about early Sonny Gray when he was throwing more 93 to 95. And now you look at him with Cincinnati, he's their best pitcher. So I think it's a mixture between Tim Hudson and Sonny Gray for me.
Last night, we saw Ben Brown just have a phenomenal start, 7 innings pitched, 10 strikeouts, no hits. What did you see out of him in his time with the Iowa Cubs that you think is just going to translate into making him just a really good major leaguer?
Just high octane. I mean, everything is just so live. The knuckle curve comes out of the hand so sharp. Fastball just jumps out of the hand, 96 to 98. And when you're, what, 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", that 96 to 98 when it has late run and it has late movement looks more like 100 to 102 with that long reach. So as long as he keeps his fastball down, or if he's playing up, he's just on the, you know, what they call it, the elevator, the ladder, you know, going low, going middle, going high, and not just sticking middle high. I think his stuff is going to keep him in the big leagues for a decade. He's that good.
You talked just there a couple minutes ago about what you called the shot heard around social media. We'll probably feature it for a clip here in this episode. It was awesome. I mean, that was a good call, a good play. Everything about it was awesome. Pete obviously did some time upstairs again this year, had decent success. We've talked about it on this podcast. You would think that's going to happen again this year. What do you think a guy like Pete Crow Armstrong that's just teetering between right now, what is he trying to do in his at-bats in Iowa or on the road? And why is he finding so much success so far this season in AAA?
Well, I think for Pete, it is two-strike approach, just making sure that he makes contact. Because if he gets the ball on the ground on the left side, he makes every play noteworthy, critical. He puts pressure on the defenders because his speed is so elite from the left side. So I think it's just making more and more contact. The strikeout rate is dropping. And I think he was actually really good up at the big leagues. But just being able to get him regular at-bats at 22 years old, because you're talking about a guy who could be your center fielder for 8 to 10 years. And when it comes to offensive growth, there's a huge difference in a year between getting 350 at-bats than getting 200 at-bats. And if he was up in the big leagues, he probably would have been around 200, 220 playing every other day, pinch hitting, defensive substitution. But here, making sure that he gets his best 100, 150 at-bats to get into a rhythm and then going back up to the big leagues, helping the Cubs hopefully make the playoffs and win the Central. It's an important part of his growth. So I think just getting the ABs and making sure that you get the process within those ABs, getting 350 at-bats is much more important to him and his growth than getting him up there right now in May as a platoon player, in my opinion.
Yeah.
We see Porter Hodge in the major leagues right now, and he's had a couple of nice appearances. You mentioned Palencia, and he's had some good appearances for Iowa Cubs, but who else out of the arms, because the Cubs bullpen has obviously been a problem. Who else do you think could potentially come up this year and make a difference in that Cubs bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, you brought up Porter Hodge, obviously, and now here on Major League Rehab, not only do you have Daniel Palencia, but you also have Keegan Thompson. So those are three relievers right there that, if they are healthy, can jump right into not only the Cubs bullpen, but also the back end of the Cubs bullpen. And if you get Julian Merriweather back, I actually think the Cubs are in really good shape when it comes to their bullpen. I am not particularly surprised with the success that the starting rotation is at, but I think when their bullpen gets healthy and you get Merriweather back and you possibly get Alzolay back and you get Keegan Thompson back and you get Daniel Palencia back, those are four really talented arms that you could put right into high leverage situations at the back end of your bullpen and be in a good spot. So it's not as much of the guys that are here right now. I mean, and there's still some really good arms at the iCubs. You have a talented righty in Eduardo Nunez. There was 97 to 99 with a good breaking ball. Sam McWilliams is an intriguing arm. He's 6'7". His strikeouts rate's like 16 strikeouts per nine innings. So, you know, those are two arms that stick out to me in regards to stuff. But I think it's just getting everybody healthy, getting your major league rehabbers back up there that could really catapult the Cubs bullpen into, you know, they're banged up. Mark Leiter Jr. has like an appearance every other game, making sure that he's well rested and making sure that you have that depth.
I'm looking through your Twitter a little bit just because I know you're pretty frequent on Twitter, and I love to see your stuff, your reports about various Cubs players, whether it's major leaguers on rehab starts or just updates about prospects. And one player you're talking about a lot in recent weeks is Brennan Davis. What's the case study right now on Brennan Davis from your perspective?
Yeah, the case study is he's finally healthy and he's finally getting regular at-bats, and he finally had an offseason where he wasn't recovering from surgery or wasn't trying to recapture strength or flexibility. Remember, he's 24 years old. 24 years old. He is 2.5 years younger than the average AAA outfielder. And this is now becoming a prolonged stretch where last 15 games, he's sitting right around 400. He's striking out like 13% of the time. His on-base percentage is around 500. I mean, at some point, he's a guy who's on your 40-man roster, 24 years old, might be thinking about giving him a chance. The only issue is Cubs are so deep outfield-wise in their organization where you have, say, Suzuki, Ian Happ, Cody Bellinger locked up. Mike Talkman's been tremendous. And then you have Pete Crow Armstrong, Alexander Canario, Brennan Davis, and just a level below, Kevin Alcantara. So it's a stacked part of your organization. It's a great part to have depth, but you know, you have three outfield spots and you have seven or eight outfielders that you have in your system. That math doesn't really add up.
So who do you think's a player just across all the Cubs minor league levels that we haven't mentioned yet that you think is really just going to burst on the scene this year and not necessarily with the major league team, but really start to catch some eyes that, you know, he's a legit prospect that could eventually make some waves for the Cubs?
Yeah, I don't think Owen Casey's being talked about enough. I mean, people had been talking about him. I mean, he had a really nice spring training, but he's 6'3", he's got great plate discipline. He oozes athleticism. He can play both corner outfield positions, you know, right and left. He has an above average arm. He has above average speed. He has above average power. It's legitimate five tools from Casey. I mean, this doesn't just grow off of trees. So I think obviously people have been talking about Owen Casey. I've heard some really big time comps for him. You know, Sean Casey, Mark Grace, you know, guys who have made all-stars and decades and careers up in the big leagues. So I just don't think that he's being talked about enough.
Let's talk a little bit about just your experience in minor league baseball, maybe the team. You're obviously close to the team itself, traveling with them and what's so. What is it like at that level? I mean, you've seen it in movies and things like that. We all have, but like, is it that much different than the major leagues? And how do those guys, you know, keep into their day to day when they're traveling and everything like that? Is it a grind?
Outside of the baseball, every single thing about AAA baseball is different than the big leagues. You know, right. When you are traveling, you're flying on a flight, you're sitting in middle seats on a Southwest or an American flight, and you're connecting in St. Louis or Chicago or Detroit or Atlanta. On a AAA flight in the big leagues, you are on your own team flight. You're not sitting at a 3-hour layover in Washington, D.C. like the Cubs were last month when traveling to Syracuse. You're not waiting through security. You're not waking up at 3:30 in the morning. You're not here, obviously not staying at five-star hotels or staying at five-star hotels. So everything about it is different. I mean, you are one level away, and it feels like you are one eternity away in some cases. And I can completely understand how players are bitter when they're in the big leagues coming out of AAA or staying in AAA when they've been in the big leagues. I mean, it's the biggest differential between lifestyle and accommodations of any level in baseball.
All right, favorite rehab start stories. It could be over 6 years with the Cubs or with different teams. Like, who have you seen?
Sure.
Who have you called games for that you're like, this is awesome, or it really didn't go well and it was just a good story?
I mean, the Cubs have had tremendous ones. Wilson Contreras hitting a home run in Indianapolis for us in 2021 was a big one. Seiya Suzuki hitting a home run for us last year at Principal Park was a big one. Chris Bryant, my first year, revitalized the whole franchise because the Cubs were the worst team record-wise in baseball when he came in, what was it, August 2018. It was a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and our crowds were 8,000, 9,000, 9,000 just to see KB. So that was a big one. Craig Kimbrell, when he signed with the Cubs back in 2019, his first game at Principal Park, he was signing autographs for 45 minutes. And then last year, wow. Kyle Hendricks, just the nicest human ever. I mean, he was probably my favorite major league rehabber to be around just because he was so kind.
What are your thoughts on Kyle as it pertains to right now? Obviously a sticky situation with the Cubs and Kyle. And I've heard all accounts that he is a wonderful human, as you just said. And at one point in his career, an amazing pitcher. Coming out of the bullpen now, what do you think the best case scenario is for Kyle?
I mean, I think you need to let it take shape. I mean, he's somebody who you have to give that rope and you have to give that type of grace to be able to adjust to a new role. And if it doesn't work out, he'd be the first person to admit it and admit that he's a hindrance to the team and want the Cubs to succeed and go forward. But what Kyle Hendricks has meant to the organization, I think you give him this opportunity to develop. And I know it's crazy to think develop. He's 33, 34 years old. Why does he need to develop? Well, he's been in one role for 12, 13 years to develop to a new role. And I think you have to give him that opportunity.
Yeah.
You mentioned all those years going back all the way to 2018, and someone who's been around the Cubs organization for all those years has been David Bodie, whether it's been he's been with the big league club or in Iowa. What's the situation as it pertains with him, but also what has he meant to the Iowa Cubs in terms of kind of like veteran leadership and helping these guys get to the major leagues?
I'll start with the last question. He's meant a lot. Everything just to have that familiarity and almost like a second bench coach and second manager in that dugout, a guy who has seen everything, been everywhere, an unheralded draft pick from community college in 2012, then another shot heard around social media and baseball with the grand slam at Wrigley Field 2018, 5 years in the big leagues, and now, you know, back here at the AAA level for his second year. He's been up on top of the mountain on his way down, and now, you know, just making sure that he can ride that wave one more time. And I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that David Bote right now can hit left-handed pitching up with the big leagues and help that lineup for Chicago. But it's more complex than that when you're on the back end of a 5-year deal and what it means to the finances and luxury tax and everything like that. So it's a lot more above my pay grade than those type of decisions to be made. But I do think that David Bote can help at the big league level right now, situationally. And then also, if you're looking for instant offense, like the Cubs have been struggling offensively for the last 2 weeks, he could help with that.
Seen all kinds of tweets about it, and I was wondering if there was any thoughts there. So I appreciate Ben getting that question in. All right, you retweeted the video of the Brewers fans with the Craig Counsell 3-minute diss track video and said, I'm sure this won't backfire at all. Well, we're on the topic this week. I got to ask your honest thoughts. The Score was talking about it this morning. It has been everywhere. Just the floor is yours. Tell us about that one.
Good luck. Good luck. I mean, I just like weighing the pros and cons, like making that video one is a con, but doing it in May, like go for it, man. I mean, if it works out, it works out. It was tough to watch.
Go ahead, Mikey.
Well, I was just going to say I couldn't get through it. I still haven't watched the whole 3-minute thing. It's just too cringeworthy. They almost got me to watch it. I was listening to the Score this morning, and they said it goes on way too long, but I couldn't do it. What's up, Ben?
It's horrible. I watched like a minute of it, and I had to turn it off, but it goes back to that video a couple of years ago when the San Diego Padres fans made that.
Right, against the Phillies.
Phillies.
And that one was actually worse. I mean, that one was bad. I mean, the Brewers one, the guy can actually like carry a tune. I watched the whole 3 minutes. You don't have to watch it. Yeah, don't. Yeah, take my word for it. It's not great. But again, like, yeah, funny. You do it when you win the division. I'm not sure you do that when it's May and you're what, 3.5 games up. So,
It's a shame, Alex. We really appreciate your time. We're wrapping up here. Any other comments for us or about the Iowa Cubs for the season?
Yeah, it's just a really exciting team. If you guys or anybody listening in has an opportunity to come down to Principal Park, we have games up until September 15th, special day, also my birthday. Happy 21st to me. it's a great time to be a Cubs fan in general, not just because of the Chicago Cubs, but also you have a top 5 farm system in baseball. And yeah, you can grade out Jed Hoyer and Jared Banner and Carter Hawkins and company, but one, they've drafted really well early, and two, they've made great trades over the last 3 years that have revitalized the organization depth-wise and everything that they've been able to do with, you know, getting guys like Ben Brown for David Robertson and getting guys like Hayden Wesneski for Scott Efros and Pete Crow Armstrong for a half a year of Javi Baez. I mean, they've done work, and that work is beginning to pay off. So, you know, obviously on the field for the Cubs has been back and forth. They're hovering around 500 right now. They're in contention. They're getting healthy. But what the big guys in the organization have been able to do revitalizing the system, in my opinion, what I've been able to see, it's pretty special.
Thanks, Alex. We appreciate your time.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you to Mr. Alex Cohen of the Iowa Cubs. That was a lot of fun to have him on the podcast. Hope to have him on again sometime soon. He talked about there at the end about when they're on Marquee moving forward. It's all available online. I have the schedule. I pulled it up during that interview. They do it a lot. They have the Iowa Cubs on Marquee on Cubs off days an awful lot. So take a listen when you get a chance. But Ben, before we end the episode, we already did our begging and pleading for the Cubs to go win this week. Let's talk about something a little bit more positive. The Valley running deep on the road to Omaha.
The Evansville Purple Aces. 9th ever 4-seed to make it to a super regional. I'm lucky to say one of my best friends, Kevin McCormick, shout out. He's on the Evansville team, so congratulations to him beating Eastern Carolina. You know, hopefully we're getting some June magic with the Purple Aces, even though, you know, I'm a Redbird at heart. So it is good to see the Valley succeed. You always got to root for the mid-majors, man.
Oh, absolutely, especially in this day and age in college sports. I feel like baseball, though, is so much less affected by what's going on in football and basketball as it pertains to, like, loyalty and things like that. Like, it still happens, but like, I feel like baseball, college baseball, is still pretty pure as it pertains to mid-majors having a shot. Although, like you said, though, it's rare for a mid-major mid-major powerhouse like Indiana State or something like that to not continue on through the super regionals. So it's great to see. ISU got beat pretty bad by Evansville a couple times this year, if I remember correctly, right?
They were 0-5.
Yeah.
They and got swept really, there. That's what kind of like put it's actually kind of funny because Illinois State was super hot at that point.
Yes.
And that's what kind of turned the wheels for them. And now since the Illinois State series, Evansville is 28-7, I think. And they were at 500 when they played Illinois State. So they're 28-7, and that's including winning the Missouri Valley Conference and winning a regional and, you know, being however many teams are left in college baseball. So pretty impressive stuff.
Damn, well, I guess good for the Redbirds to help them spur that. The Redbirds were 8-9 before they played Evansville, and then they just got beat in 3 games, 9-1, 6-5, and 13-1. Ben, it feels like the good old days when I was still in college talking Redbirds.
Really?
It feels good. It's back. It feels natural. Talking Redbirds to end the podcast, not the Cardinals, the Illinois State Redbirds. If we have any new listeners, by the way, who listen to this episode because of Alex Cohen, thank you for being here. I'm Mikey, and this is Ben. I went to Illinois State. He goes to Illinois State. I have to say it like that now.
Well, I was laughing at when you sent me the email to join this Zoom or whatever.
Oh, yeah. I knew you were going to make fun of that.
Your sign-off says sports director. Hang it up, buddy.
I have to close the yearbook. I gotta change my email signature because I still use that email signature for jobs and stuff too. And so every time I send an email, I delete that. But I have to go into the source and delete that so it'd be easier. You gotta add that to your email signature.
I know.
Well, and then it gets fun because when you like email teachers and stuff for class on that same email, you can like, you might accidentally forget to delete it or something, and they might have comments. Like, I've had teachers be like, oh shoot, like the director, like, well, you know, you think you're hot shit. So no, that was always funny games. But Ben, it's been awesome to have another episode here. I'm going to the game tomorrow, as I alluded to, with another former sports director, Leo Stodher, and some Z&D guys from back in the day. So I'll be boots on the ground, hopefully seeing Shota get the win.
Hopefully. And getting us back on the right track.
You can hope so.